industry. During the financial crisis, the first industry to collapse and where corruption was greatest was in the property market and the property booms in the United States. In our industry, fortunately, we've had a very well-regulated industry. Recently, we can say that the estate agency has performed its functions because one of the largest companies, it's been in the newspapers, but during the financial crisis, obviously, many estate agents was doing very well. When there was a housing boom, high housing prices was going up, and there was lots of profits to be made in the industry. However, when the crisis, when the market slowed down, many estate agents then were about to not make as much profit, and then they started to, in a sense, engage in malpractices. And we had the big case now of Wendy Mechanic, where one of our largest estate agents basically went in to use the funds, which are home buyers' deposits, which are supposed to be kept in a guaranteed fund. It's not supposed to be put into your own account as a company. It's supposed to be put into a fidelity fund so that if the house sale doesn't go through, you can get your money back. And clearly many companies, and especially this big company, use that money for its own CEO's salaries and the running expenses of the company. So the agency acted very decisively in this matter. They took up the, they had a report from a whistleblower, and I must say both the board and the staff and the CEO worked together to deal with this matter decisively. There currently is a further four or five investigations of very large companies where there has been whistleblower reports that these companies are engaging in corrupt practices. I think, again, the board is dealing with that matter. The matter is under investigation. But as you know, when you're dealing with matters of malpractices of such a magnitude, you have to follow due process. And in terms of our constitution, everybody is innocent until proven guilty, so we have to conduct the investigation. The board is busy with that investigation. When the findings are reported, they will go to the courts, as they have done in the Wendy Mechanic case, and the matter will be dealt with. So, Mr. Chairman, in terms of our regulatory function and the protection of consumers in this industry, the minister annually meets with all the 15 institutions falling under the DTI, the 15 agencies, and he had a meeting with the board in early Feb, end of Jan, early Feb, and there he looked at, he assessed their performance for the year and the strategic plan for the year ahead. So the presentation that you have in front of you from the board was presented to the minister, and as I indicated, he was satisfied with their performance, and he then also adopted their strategic plan for the coming year. He also indicated that should they require any further resources or support in terms of them carrying on the activities, he had undertaken to provide them with that support. We also then tabled into Parliament 2 days ago. We tabled the strategic plans of all our agencies and the DTI as required by Parliament. So those reports are now formally before you. And just a final point about our agencies. Whilst the minister has oversight of all agencies, we do not, in the normal course of events, operate in the day-to-day decisions of the board and in operational decisions. They have operational independence. Employment matters are usually left completely to the board. And Mr. Chairman, if you want to, I can later. We do have a statement to which we release because, as you know, there is currently lots of speculation and matters. The dismissal of the CEO is currently before the court. There will be a judgment later today on that matter. But we have issued a statement to reassure the public about what is happening in this matter, and I could later on deal with that matter in more detail. Thank you.
No, thanks very much. I'm sure because there was a media release on the statement, but some of the people that do not have it I'm sure you'll be able to forward that statement. Mr. Bolani, the floor is yours.
Mr. Chairman, honorable members, thank you for giving us the opportunity to share with you the work that we do as the AAB, Estate Agency Affairs Board. According to the invitation that we got, we were requested to do a short presentation on the turnaround strategy and transformation policies that we're putting in place as an organization. But as the acting DG has correctly stated, we would be willing to share with you other activities that we're engaged in that may not be covered in the presentation. If you look at our slide, if I can just go straight into the presentation so that I don't take much of your time. The AB has five main responsibilities in terms of the Estate Agency Affairs Act of 1976. Number one, we've got to do registrations to register all acting traders in the country, estate agents. We need to ensure that they've got a valid Fidelity Fund certificates and that they pay their levies on an annual basis. We also conducted disciplinary hearings against those estate agents who may not be complying with our requirements. We've also put in place a very comprehensive educational program to ensure that all estate agencies are properly qualified, that this is a professional industry, and that consumers get the service that they deserve. We've got to do regular inspections of all estate agencies in the country on a regular basis. And we've got to conduct claims. So I might say that last year we awarded to consumers from the Fidelity Fund an amount in the region of just below 5 million rands. And the claims committee meets at least six times a year to listen to those consumers who've got claims against the Fidelity Fund, those consumers who may have been victims of unscrupulous estate agencies. So in summary, that's what we do as the Estate Agency Affairs Board. Like any other organization, we do have challenges. We do acknowledge these challenges, and these challenges need to be dealt with on a regular basis. And I've listed some of the main challenges that this board is currently dealing with. High on our list is, of course, the issue of transformation. You may know that according to our statistics, only 6% of registered estate agents in the country are Africans. Only 6%, you know, talking about 46,000 operating estate agents in the country, and only 6% of them are Africans. And this clearly shows that we have quite a huge challenge when it comes to transformation within the industry. The other problem that we're grappling with is a lack of clear policy guidelines and strategies around the issues of compliance. I'm talking about registration, I'm talking about inspections, and the organization in its last meeting, the last board meeting, we tabled the first draft policy of a policy that will deal with the inspections and investigations, and that policy will be transparent, it will be put on our website so that everybody in the country who's interested in the property industry is aware what the EAB is doing in terms of inspections, if there are targets, and in terms of investigations. And this information will be provided on a regular basis. We hope to finalize this policy at our next meeting on the 24th of March. We're also concerned about the number of people in the country are operating as estate agents without valid Fidelity Fund certificates. And we estimate that those people are between 5,000 and 10,000. The other problem that we have relates to our IT infrastructure. The organization has spent about 20 million rands in the past few years. and we still do not have an IT infrastructure that makes it easy for people to register, for us to monitor the number of estate agents who are registered, to be able to tell people very clearly how many Fidelity Fund certificates have been issued and so on and so forth. And we've appointed Deloitte to investigate what the problem is and then to be able to inform us what are the problems so that we can work on solutions. Because for us as a board, it is quite important that we should have a system that is working well for people to be able to register quickly and to be able to provide statistics on a regular basis. Because also of the problem of people are operating without valid Fidelity Fund certificates, we're having a problem in the increase in the number of fraudulent claims that mainly come from those people who deal with these agents, especially in the previously disadvantaged areas. The other problem has been our low profile of the organization. I think it began to change with the Wendy Mechanic matter when it became public at the beginning of December last year. There's still also an issue with the low consumer awareness, especially among the black people. We're not happy as a board with our poor customer services and also poor working conditions for employees within the organization. These are the issues that the board is currently dealing with, and we hope to have a solution to all these issues before the end of April this year. As I indicated that we have a problem with the transformation issues, EAB has never had a policy on how to deal with transformation issues, and this board is attempting for the first time to put up a policy that will address issues of transformation in the property industry that is worth about 500 billion rands a year. We have appointed a board transformation committee, and we have also invited the representatives of the National Property Forum, the property charter which we are supporting, and there will also be involvement of the services sector and other key role players. And we hope that in the next 3 months we'll be able to produce for the very first time a clear transformation policy of the EAB that will be implemented vigorously and on which we'll report regularly to the South African community. We've also started negotiations with banks, for instance. We are talking to the Deeds Office. We are talking to SARS because we want to make it impossible for unregistered traders to carry on with business. So if a business comes from an unregistered estate agent, if we have the support of all these stakeholders I'm talking about, it will become quite difficult for them to register those businesses. We're also looking at our educational requirements. We do know that there are quite a lot of people who want to get into this business, but who may lack matric and therefore unable to qualify to become estate agents. So we are considering translating some of our learning materials into our major African languages so that English does not become a barrier to entry, and that will be achieved before the end of the year. The other major initiative that we're going to be embarking on at the beginning of April is the amnesty one. As I indicated earlier, we've got about 5,000 to 10,000 unregistered traders in the country, and we're going to be introducing an amnesty period that will last between 3 to 6 months so as to get all these unregistered estate agents to register with the board. And this policy will become available, as I said, at the beginning of April, and it will be submitted by quite an aggressive consumer education campaign. In terms of compliance, which really is our core business as the EAB, we are also, as I said earlier, also we are developing a transparent policy on inspections and investigations, and we want to be able to have a target, for instance, to say in a particular quarter or in 6 months or in a year, we will be able to inspect so many estate agencies in all our nine provinces, something that was not done in the past. We are also planning to review our whistleblower hotline, which has not been working quite effectively, and it has been compromised on a number of occasions, so that whatever information we get from this whistleblower hotline is credible and that it can be investigated properly. Our inspectorate service is currently outsourced to four major companies in the country. The plan is that by September this year, this should become an in-house service. We have a call center that quite a number of first aid agents have been complaining about. People don't return calls. People don't get the right information. We get to these complaints almost on a daily basis, and we're now addressing this issue, and we're hoping that in the next few months we'll be able to have a professional call center that will be able to provide people with a very quick and professional service at all times. We hope to improve the turnaround times for claims that are submitted to the board, and also implement a name and shame policy for those estate agents who are found not to be complying with the act. We also have education and training, which has to ensure that there's compliance with the SACA Authority Act, and we've introduced the National Qualifications Framework 4 and 5. The whole aim really is to ensure that we professionalize the industry, consumers get the right service, and as I've said earlier, some of this material will be translated into African languages, and we expect that before the end of 2011, at least training material will be available at least in two African languages. We therefore have two qualifications presently. The Further Education and Training Certificate Real Estate, which is NQF Level 4, and the National Certificate Real Estate, which is an NQF Level 5. As the acting DG stated earlier, consumer protection is one of our responsibilities as the AB, and as chairman also of a small NGO, the National Consumer Forum, this is something that is of great interest to me, and we've been conducting imbizos, we've been preparing material in all languages, and the call center will be quite active in this to ensure that people in our country are not taken advantage of, they don't fall victims of unscrupulous business people, and that at all times people are aware of their rights and responsibilities. And with the launch today of the Consumer Commission, unfortunately, I had to miss the launch because I have to come here. I think it will be very important that the EAB works together with the Consumer Commission to ensure that all South Africans, especially the poor and the vulnerable, are afforded the necessary protection, and that we deal with the unscrupulous activity by estate agencies. As I briefly indicated earlier in my presentation, we intend to work very, very closely with other stakeholders, be it financial institutions, your CETAs, your government, your provincial and municipal government, to ensure that, you know, estate agents get opportunities, information is available to all stakeholders and consumers, and that this industry is representative. And I thought, Mr. Chair, this is just an introduction to what we do, and we can then have a discussion, and we'll be quite keen to answer whatever question the honorable members may have for us. Thank you.
Acting DG, I'm not sure whether I would want to utilize this opportunity even to touch on the statement, or you'd want to do that later on, but I think it would be pretty okay if you do it now.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Shivan, we, as you know, the matter has been in the media and before the court, where the board suspended the chief executive officer, and thereafter terminated her contract. As I said, the employment-related matters are not matters which the minister gets involved to in the normal course of events, and this is within the operational independence of the board. But there was a public concern about this matter, that it was reported that Nomonde Mapetla was suspended and dismissed because she was fighting malpractices and fraud and corruption in the industry, and because she was wanting to transform the industry, she was, and I think legitimately because as South Africans and the public and honorable members, I think people are concerned about protecting people that do act decisively in the interest of the public interest. So what the minister did ask, but obviously the minister has to be, remain neutral in this matter because he may be called on to intervene in this matter. So he obviously cannot intervene. So he instructed myself as the acting DG, Ms. Skaltz, and our Deputy Director General for Consumer and Corporate Affairs, Zodwan Thuli, to meet with both parties and to find out what is happening and then table a report to him on what he should do in this matter. So as officials, we met with the board to get an explanation of what transpired in the CEO matter, and we also met with Ms. Nomonde Mapetla to hear her side of the story. We met with them last Thursday, and we then did some further preliminary investigations, and we tabled a report to the minister on Tuesday this week. In that report, what became clear when we investigated this matter, that there was really major disputes of fact in this matter. According to the CEO, she was unfairly dismissed, no procedures was followed, and that she was completely caught by surprise. The allegations against her have no substance. On the other hand, our information from the board is that they were dealing with a, the CEO was not performing, and there was a number of issues of governance in this matter. So with that, and as we, as we couldn't really, this is a matter for the courts to determine these disputes of fact, and as DTI, we cannot really make a judgment on this matter. So we reported to this, to the minister, and he accepted that. And also at that stage, the matter proceeded to court, and what we then indicated to the court is that we would abide the decision of the court. This is a matter for judiciary, and we will abide the decision of court. We will remain neutral in this matter. The minister did, however, ask, and or we recommended to him, that we should launch a very short investigation, independent audit, because as an oversight body, we have a duty to Parliament and to the public to ensure that our agencies all act in a fit and proper manner in terms of performing their statutory functions. So whilst we are not, we have no interest in the employment disputes, but we must reassure the public that the statutory body is not abusing its powers and so on. So that is the nature of our investigation. It is really for the minister to satisfy himself that proper processes was followed. And so we are not, as I said, in the, we are not investigating the dismissal dispute. So that will be done within 2 weeks, and then the minister will report on that matter. Because of the public concern about this matter, which, as I said, it is legitimate because of the problems in the sector, we therefore also release the statement to the press late on Wednesday, on Tuesday evening, to the newspaper. Thank you. That's the position of the department.
Thanks very much to the chairperson and to the acting DG. I'll give this opportunity now to the members to ask some questions of clarity. But guide on what the acting DG said, that shouldn't dwell into the merits of the issues that are before the court. Honorable Nyambi, Honorable Nguri.
Thanks, Chair. Let me start by welcoming the presentation that is giving us a picture of what is happening and the current issue that is on the public domain. The first question is in relation to the number of the fraudulent claims. If you can maybe give an estimation in terms of percentage so that we can have an understanding. Then the second one is in relation to the amnesty that is going to be done. You said around April, the duration of it. Is it going to be a month? Is it going to be 2 months? Is it going to be 3 months? How are you intending to take it? Then the, of course, Chairperson, we have said there are some, the issue of the CEO is in court and we have to be extra careful when dealing with it. But at the same time, we are expected to be able to understand that we're doing effective oversight on the very same bodies. So that is why you'll understand my question, but I'll be guided whenever they're expected to give a response. You know, for the past few days, I'm getting it from the presentation that you even have the strategy of how you want to provide it so that consumers can be aware that you have a body like this one. But for the past few days, you are always on the media, whether for right or wrong reasons, debatable. Looking at the statement, this one is directed first to the department. Looking at the statement, once there is a process that is in court and of course the minister is neutral and you have a team that is a committee that is doing investigation, I get a sense that you are giving us what was said by the board and what was said by the CEO, but I don't get a sense of what were your real findings, besides that you have recommended that there's going to be another investigation that will take 2 weeks, and after 2 weeks, but you'll be abided by the court. How do you link the two? If ever maybe the court can pronounce itself and then only to find that it's contrary to what you might have found, because there's no way that you can have the board doing a presentation and you can have the CEO doing a presentation and you can come to us, and maybe it's because the issue is at the court, but I don't get a sense what is your real finding when you engage the board and you engage the CEO in giving us a sense to have a clear understanding. Of course the court is going to pronounce itself, but if ever a person can ask me after this meeting to say, do you have a sense of what is happening about the issue of the CEO? I must be in a position to talk with authority and with understanding. But I don't know, Chair, you'll guide, because whether the department, because I don't expect that much from the board. The board, they have presented their part and it's really assisting. But from the department, they are the people that have engaged both sides. So I think they are supposed to assist us so that you can be able to engage the board without undermining the process of the court. So I'm posing it, Chairperson, to the department that a little bit of elaboration on that issue so that we can have a clear sense and be able to ask relevant questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, my first question is on the slide number 2. Unfairly defined certificate. The Chairperson said that there's lack of transformation in the industry. And my question is, what are the barriers of entry that make it difficult to transform the industry, especially when coming to the fidelity fund certificates? Are the certificates issued if perhaps a member of the board, or maybe not a member of the board, but if the agency has got the minimum, or let me rephrase my question, do you have perhaps minimum cash reserve that should be in order to issue the FFC fund, I mean the FF certificate. Do you have any perhaps notes to say, no, in order for us to issue the certificate, he must have this minimum of funds so that you can, you know, pay the potential buyers if the deal falls through. Could that be a barrier of entry or other issues? On the issue of transformation again, I think slide number 3, lack of transformation in the industry. There's an act that was gazetted or promulgated some time ago, the GIAMA, and also there's a program by Public Works, PIP, as far as property dealers are concerned. Now, how far is that act gone in transforming the industry, and how effective is this property incubation program by Public Works to bring in or to bring on board black property dealers so that the industry is racialized? Because I know for a fact that in most cities and towns, all property owners are basically white. That's why the government introduced the GIAMA in order to de-racialize the industry. In cases like Johannesburg, Bloemfontein, Devon, you find that of all the money just exchange hands between government and property dealers, it's less than 10% that goes to black property dealers. In Devon, for instance, it, as far as I know, it was zero, and that's why it was zero property dealers. So how do you come in so that you racialize the industry as the board? My question is perhaps irrelevant because you're not dealing directly with property dealers, but you're dealing with the board. But I think that's one of the issues that you look at as a report. And then on the amnesty, you said there's between 5,000 and 10,000 traders are believed to be operating illegally. For the trader to be recognized or to be legally, is there a minimal qualification? Or is just the trader just have to go and register? Because during the property boom, I know there are a lot of people who were actually selling property to people, and they belong to, you know, estate agencies. Now, do you have a minimum qualification for that estate agency or agent to be admitted so that he or she becomes legal? And then on compliance, it actually ties in with the first same question of the CEO. He's saying that the CEO was dismissed. Here it says, according to the acting DG, the CEO was dismissed by the board on the issues of governance. And the CEO says there were no allegations against say that actually had substance. On page 2 of this statement, it says that there was no disagreement between the board and the CEO because they worked together on dealing on fraud and corruption in the industry. My question on compliance is that if then the CEO was really making sure that he performs his duties by making sure that estate agent boards comply, and if they don't comply, she acted against them, of which you agree as well, why then was he dismissed? Might be perhaps some we're asking questions that to be dealt with in court. However, as the chairman said, you will be guided by your party. I just find it confusing for me because you're both acting for the benefit of the consumers, and yet you disagree on issues, on governance issues, corporate governance issues, or what is done based on ethics or whatever. You know, the King 2 report is not, I think there's King 3 report now. No. Was it against those, or was it something really substantial that pushed the board to take a decision?
Well, Adam. Thank you, Chair. Let me also join my colleagues in welcoming the presentation and say thank you to the acting DG and his department, and to the State Agency Affairs Board Regulatory, to the State Agency Affairs Board Chairperson and his team. Chair, you know, South Africa, in terms of the constitution, have been governed by three pillars of governance: the judiciary, the executive, and the legislative sector. Now, in most of the cases, these three arms does not interfere with one another. And it's quite strange for me, you know, and we do get these questions, that if a thing is before the court, that any department or any person is, for that matter, runs and try and explain, because I believe that the truth will come out in court. Otherwise, why do you go to court? So I want to join my colleague in saying that it's quite confusing that for the department or the board or anyone to bring out statements like this, shouldn't they wait for the court to have declared a judgment so that the process, we know, would have been fair and there would have been due diligence on the process. That's the one thing, Chair. Chair, the other one is the poor IT infrastructure. I think the board has been established for quite some time now, and as we know, technology is moving, even in schools, everywhere. Now, for such a high, I would say, profile board, because you are dealing with people's lives, you are dealing with where people need to be settled, and why such a poor IT infrastructure? Why is the challenge? What are you doing about it? Are you, is the funds that you receive from DTI too little? Is it inadequate? Doesn't it provide you to buy or to equip your IT system to be on par with the technology? Because technology changes per minute. Technology changes per minute. You could see the cell phones. Couple of years we had massive bricks. Now the how successful you are not measured by how big your cell phone is, but what your cell phone can do. And the smaller the cell phone is, that shows that you are very successful in life. You know, you pick out the cell phone, and it's that passive. He says, no, this guy is struggling. This guy comes and talks here. He's not a good estate agent or something to that effect. Jay, then also the the other question is on slide 4, the amnesty. You know, if a person is wrong, you're wrong. Why must you give amnesty? Why don't you just cut it? It's like if you are operating illegal, you're a thief. And theft can't be condoned. Because if you do get these illegal operators, and they sell default houses, they sell houses that crumbles on people, and massive claims have been done. Why do you still want to give people amnesty? They are wrong, cut them off. Say, you are wrong, if you found them out, take them to court. Let the police deal with the matter. Or why? I can't understand why you still want to give amnesty. because if they are thieves, they are thieves. An illegal operator, you're an illegal operator. I can't, you know, if I catch crayfish illegally and they caught me, or abalone, they lock me up, they don't give me amnesty. So why do you still want to give amnesty if people are operating illegally. They haven't got license. I mean, I've seen on many adverts, Ross and Company and all those, who are training agents. They advertise, they say, we've got so a slot, come accredited, for you to become accredited. Oh, sorry, Chair, it looks to me that the press wants to break down the place. Oh, okay. They say that there's training. So I think for crying out loud, if people don't want to go and train to become an estate agent, I mean, we all have to train to what we are today, you know. So if people don't want to go and accept that training, why must we still give them amnesty? That is to develop an amnesty policy. I mean, these guys will carry on forever to trade illegal because, no, while you are battling to develop a policy for them, and a policy does not are not being formulated overnight, you know. So I think you should just take the necessary action because as a parliament and as our principals in government are also saying that we must root out corruption. We can't still condone it. We still give them chance to further the corruption because at the end of the day, you must draw the line. Now, you know, the review the whistleblower hotline, and I think that's why people don't want to, in actual fact, not whistleblower, but don't want to come forward anymore because they are not being protected. I think whistleblowers need to be protected. At this stage, because that's the guys that saves the industry millions of rand, that saves the industry from being taken to court, that saves the industry from getting a bad name. And I think whistleblowers need to be protected. We need to protect whistleblowers. I mean, you can't review the hotline, but there's no protection for the whistleblowers. I would then ask you to review your whistleblower policy in terms of the protection for those people that whistleblow for the other, you know, that whistleblow in there. Chair, and then Chair, let me stop with that. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
I forgot just the last one there.
Okay.
I'm going to see. Is the third last slide, consumer protection. I just want to find out how prevalent is this unscrupulous behavior by the agencies on the low-income earners or the low-income group, the houses, because you find that the person buys a house, for instance, an RDP house, and then he or she sells it. How involved are the estate agencies in such activities and in other low-income earners?
Thanks very much. I just have a few questions. One is to appreciate that, you know, the board has been having some good audit reports because that is our main function as we do oversight, whether boards and departments actually function properly and they get good audit reports. To that, I want to take my hat off to the board. They have been doing that very well. And that is our main function. So we want to appreciate that for the number of years you've been doing very well. I did say in the beginning that we did go to the DTI campus, and the report on transformation was almost the same. You know, that was about 2 years back, lack of transformation. And 2 years after that, we still talk of lack of transformation. What has really been the problem that we should move? Because then in 2009, the same report was between 4% and 6% of people of black people are in the industry. What has been the real challenge, say now, to really have a quantum leap to move forward on transformation? It's unfortunate that when you also deal with the issue of transformation, some other people and other sectors jump, you know, high and say, hey, this is reverse racism and so on, but we need transformation. The next question would be for me, what is transformation according to the board? if they face this challenge about this industry, if they want to tackle transformation, what is transformation to them, and what strategy do they have to implement this transformation? It was mentioned that there's a forum where you address transformation. I'm sure the chairperson of the board would have an interest in this, that would you have a section in that forum that represent consumers in that part of forum, and if you can put some meat on that. The other issue is that would you have capacity to do inspection? Do you? You have said that you outsource it, but do you would you really have capacity to do inspections and investigations as a board, even if you had to bring it in-house? And how fair is that going to be? I mean, you look at all the scenarios. If you're going to do it in the very same board, I know that you've got members who own estate agents as per requirement by law. Now, if you're going to have an in-house thing and you send the very same inspectors to you as a board member, how fair is that process going to be? I'm not saying the one that you have is far better. It seems to be far more better, but I want to check if you have checked the, you know, whether there won't be any cracks. You know, I take it, I also want to say something even to the members, that I believe we're a family. As a committee, the department, and the board. And this issue also about the CEO, you know, I take it as a family, if you are a family and your children do not see eye to eye, they will go to such an extent of going to court. But it doesn't prevent you as a parent to ask your children, you know, what is actually happening? You cannot then fold your arms and say, hey, the matter is in court now, I must leave them. We are supposed to know, so that when you're other families, when other people ask you what is happening in your family, you are in a position to explain and actually defend. So I'm quite aware of the sensitivity. Some other people have also raised this issue. You know, there is this role in Parliament, Rule 48, that we're not supposed to discuss issues that are pending before the courts, where judgment is to be, you know, outlined. But also in the Constitution, there is Section 69, which says the NCOP and its committees have got the right to call everybody to give a report on anything. Since we are in a constitutional democracy, that's why I think we have this meeting today. So in your responses on these issues, some of the issues that are asked by the members, it's not to say, I've said to one person, because there is an interest on this matter, how do I answer and defend the actions of the department and of the board if I don't have information? Because we are a family, we're a government. I need to know what is happening so that anyone who asks me, I should say, no, you know, this is what is happening, this is what is going to happen. And I appreciate the action that was taken by the minister. Actually, this matter will end up in Parliament. This is a fact. If it lands in the minister's desk, it will also come to Parliament, it will also come to this committee. So we should be having those clear lines of where we tread. But the statement, I think, would suffice. As I say, we live in a constitutional democracy. There are many laws. There are many questions that are being asked, you know, about the procedures, the actions of the board, labor relations, but won't go into that. It is the matter for the court. We are not in the labor court. It is the matter for the investigations that have been set up by the minister to do. But at the same time, we must have this information. Mr. October, I think, did it. So that as a family, we are on the same page. If I move out here, I did say to someone, some of the media were phoning me. I said, I can't comment until we have the meeting today. Then I would have information. So it will be a travesty of justice even after a meeting I don't have information. So we just need that information for clarity so that we can clarify. I'm sure I'll first give to the acting DG. and then the chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll get to the questions from the honourable members, but just on the more general point about the Estate Agency Board and some of the issues about the regulation of the industry. As you know, we have, I mean, both Parliament and government departments have been trying to overhaul and modernise our legislation. We know we have very, very old pieces of legislation on our books from another era. And, for example, last night they passed the Companies Act, which the committee adopted the Companies Act, which overhauled the 1973 legislation, which had become really outdated. And as you know, in today's times, we have to really, we need extra regulatory powers to perform our functions, given the challenging environment we face. So we've done it for many. The credit, you're familiar, Mr. Chair, the Credit Act we introduced, which was a world first in us regulating loan sharks and machinistas. We've overhauled the consumer legislation, we're launching that today. We, 1st of April, we're also launching the new Companies Commission. Similarly, we are in a process with reviewing and then overhauling the Estate Agency Affairs Act, because there are many things we need to do in the industry which we can't do and we don't have the necessary powers to do. So we are also bringing that. So many of the questions is also that the Act itself is not as strong as we would like it to be in terms of. So I just wanted to make that point. Mr. Chairman, as you said, I mean, and I appreciate the difficulty in this issue around the CEO matter, and let me respond to the first question was, what was our findings? Seeing that we met with the CEO and we met with the board, and we, what was our findings in this matter? Now, as I indicated that, and as one of the honourable members said, there is a separation of powers in our constitutional state, and that separation powers is that government departments and parliaments don't make a determination on unfair, on dismissal disputes. That is a matter for the courts and the labor courts in particular to determine whether somebody was fairly or unfairly dismissed. So that's why when we said that we can make no judgment on this matter, is that we said given the two sides of the story on this dismissal dispute, the one side claimed they acted clearly in terms of the law, and the other, the employee said she was unfairly dismissed. She was... We as a department, we can't make a determination on that matter. So that's why it's important to clarify what was the nature of our investigation that we still want to undertake. Our investigation is not into the employment dispute. Our investigation is to see that the board, when it performed its functions, and especially with relation to the CEO, that there was no abuse of power, if I could put it in that way. We must see that they acted in a fit and proper manner, because as you know, there is a legitimate concern that the CEO was fired because she had taken on this industry and she had assisted in transforming this industry. So they're saying that the board, that there were vested interests in this industry, that want to keep the industry as it was, that want to cover up fraud and corruption, and that the CEO, when she acted strongly against this matter, that is why she was fired. As the minister says, we must assure ourselves that definitely that did not take place. So now, as I said, it's a very difficult matter because on one hand you have an employment dispute and on the other hand you have a legitimate concern. So it's very important to clarify we are not investigating. And I mentioned, Mr. Jim, the other issue, as you indicated, we are a constitutional state, we are a nation of laws. And that means there must be due process. Now, many people have been speculating about who was right and wrong in this matter. And as a department and as a government, we can't enter that speculation. We have to follow due process. We have to investigate the matter, establish the fact, and then give our advice or views on the matter. So that's why we need to spend time to question people, look at the documents, and then say whether we think there was an abuse of power or whether the board acted in a fit or proper manner. But there is always pressure which we don't pay attention to from the media want to know, was the CEO fired for this or that reason? Was the board doing this or that? And as I said, we are a nation of laws, and we cannot implicate anybody without making a proper and thorough and hearing both sides of the story. So that's why, as we said, that's at the narrow limits of what we are looking at. And then just a final point, Mr. Chairman, with regard to agencies. As you know, their functions, now there's always this question of how independent are boards and what is the role of the government and what is the role of parliament in oversight and so on. I think we're very clear on that matter. Policy direction comes from the minister and government. So he sets policy for all these institutions. Their functions are determined by you, the legislature. They are statutory bodies, and you tell them what their role is, what their powers are, and what their functions are. It's a statutory. It's not... the chairman can't determine what the state agency board do, just like the governor of the Reserve Bank can't decide that she wants to form a private company now. It's, the law sets out everybody's mandate. But administrative and effective administration is the responsibility of the board. Employing people, who you hire, who you fire, performance of staff is a matter for board. So we call that operational independence. So that's why, as I said, the minister does not want to interfere with any operational matters. But he will interfere if there's abuse of power or if they do not carry out their mandate or they do not follow the policy advice of a democratic government. So in that sense, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to clarify why in these circumstances we got involved and why also it seems confusing we're also saying we're neutral on this matter, but it's neutral in different matters. We're neutral in the employment dispute. We are not neutral in whether the body is functioning effectively.
The chairperson of the board. I'm sure the members, Mr. Chair, will assist me with some of the questions. But just let me start briefly on the issue of the CEO. I want to assure the honourable members that this has absolutely nothing to do with the Wendy Mechanic issue or the so-called probes into other big fishes. I was just telling the acting DG as we're walking up here that the lawyers who are representing us in this particular case against the CEO representing the board also represented the board in our fight with Wendy Mechanic. And if those lawyers had taken instructions from the CEO, they wouldn't have been able to represent us in this case now against her because there would have been a conflict of interest. These lawyers took instructions from us as the board. And I, as the chairperson in December, signed off on the papers to ensure that the Wendy Mechanic issue was properly handled, it was taken to court, and it was made public in the interest of consumers. As the DTI statement correctly points out, an investigation of any major agency in the country cannot be dealt with by the board alone or by the CEO acting alone. It has to be a board responsibility. And I want to assure the honorable members again that it is a purely labor matter. It's got nothing to do with politics, and we're quite disturbed that it has attracted front page stories for more than 2 weeks now. The question is, how many CEOs get fired in this country and we never get to read about them? How many senior managers, executive managers get fired and we never hear of those things? And we as a board, we are quite concerned that this issue has been politicized so much, and yet it is a very mundane labor issue that should be dealt with in an appropriate forum. But maybe someday the truth will come out, but I can assure you that amongst us, this body is mainly black. I've been a consumer activist for more than 15 years. Why would I be interested in defending the rights of a white estate agent? Why? If we were to take our minutes, you would see that the issue of the investigations of anybody is not even mentioned in any of our minutes because the investigations of any estate agencies was never properly handled, and that is why we want to come up with policies on inspections and investigations to review the whistleblower, what you call hotline, because we want things to be done correctly, because we are a regulator, we are part of government, and things need to be done in a proper way, in a legal way, and in a transparent way. So I just want to emphasize that, one, this has got nothing to do with big white companies, that this is a labor issue, and that we feel disappointed that it has been politicized so much when it shouldn't. With regard to the IT system, let me say that the EAB is self-funding. We get levies from estate agencies, so we don't get our budget from the DTI. It's what the estate agents themselves contribute to the organization. And that is why it's so important that corporate governance within the AB should not be compromised at all, because these are the monies of estate agents. And the estate agents, the AFS board, acted in the best interest of estate agents, all of them black and white, of the industry and government. And we as a board will never compromise on that. As you would know, consumer protection is opposed to corruption because we feel that undermines consumer rights and interests. And anybody in my shoes will act decisively when there is a case of abuse of government at all times. We cannot compromise it. Now, with the IT system, we have discovered that there are certain problems that cause, for instance, you have 30,000 registered estate agents, but you have 45,000 issued fidelity certificates. We discovered that there are two systems that are used in the organization. One has been implemented 5 years ago. One is new. It has been quite difficult to migrate information from the old system to the new system. And therefore, these systems are used there simultaneously. And this creates problems when it comes to registrations, when it comes to the issuance of Fidelity Fund certificates. And we felt that with the money that we have spent on this thing, it is important that we investigate it, find out what are the problems, who are responsible, and implement corrective action so that if people want to register, they're able to register quickly. We know exactly how many people are registered and how many people have been issued with a valid Fidelity Fund certificates. With regard to the whistleblower hotline, I must also say that the real reason for reviewing it is simply because we want to make sure that the information that we get is not compromised, and that we also don't compromise the security of those people who provide us with information. For instance, if you look at the Wendy Mechanic issue, it came to the attention of the board from whistleblowers, people who worked within the Wendy Mechanic properties. Those are the people who gave us information that led to the prosecution of Ms. Wendy Mechanic. And the whole idea really is to make sure that there's protection of information, the protection of whistleblowers, and that the agency is able to act quickly and decisively on all the information that we get so that we don't get leaks, that we don't act on wrong information, so that there is integrity in the way that we conduct the business. On the issue of the amnesty, not all people who are not registered are unscrupulous estate agents. I've met a few, especially in the townships. I know because I've got an office at Kwamhlanga in Mpumalanga, which has been in operation for more than a year now. I know that quite a number of people would want to be registered, but the problem is that they don't have access to information. Nobody provides them with advice on what to do, on where to go. So we need to provide proper information in the language that people understand at all times. And with this amnesty initiative, we're not really targeting unscrupulous traders. We're targeting those people who want to make a contribution to the development of our economy. But due to the problems maybe of not understanding properly, or lack of information, or lack of resources, or maybe because people have fears that, you know, are unjustified, then we can get to those people and say, look, we're there to help you. That is what the Estate Agency Affairs Board was established to do. And I believe that people who will take advantage of this amnesty initiative, many of them will be your honest traders who want to improve their lives and who want to make a contribution to the economy. With regard to claims, last year I was a member of the Claims Committee before I became chair, and I recall that we rejected more than 50% of the claims that we got, some of them because there were claims that came from deals that were concluded with unregistered traders. But some of the claims, many of them, is because in the process of submitting those claims, they did not follow the correct procedures. And it was because people were not properly advised, because people did not have access to correct information. These are the issues that the board needs to be able to address. And we're now encouraging that before people make claims, they should come to the office, get proper advice, so that they submit properly written claims to the organization. Because if that is done, then the chances are that their claims will be successful. So we stand at more than 50% of the claims that get rejected. Before I hand over to my colleagues, let me just answer one more question from the chair. It is true that the issue of transformation has been on the agenda for quite a long time, and this is really not peculiar to the EAB only. But I must admit that nothing has been done. It's something that we have acknowledged, but we've never put a program in place to address it. We fully acknowledge that. That is why this year we have decided to appoint for the first time a transformation committee within the board that will then work on this issue and submit regular reports to the DTI and other stakeholders. And again, going to the same question on amnesty. The reason why we have not taken advantage of initiatives as from, for instance, the Department of Public Works is simply because there wasn't this committee within the AB board, there was nobody championing this cause, and we feel now this is the time for the AB board to say, we've been wrong in this area, we now have to address it so that we have a proper transformation within the industry. I'm sure the members of the committee can follow up on what you've said.
Okay, thanks. Just to start with the Winnemucca issue, I think I need to make this point. You know, as a previous chair of the board, the Winnemucca case was never an initiative by CEO. It was an initiative by this board through the whistleblowing, the process. And you will recall, honourable members, that there's no CEO that can fire a board member. It's the other way around. But there's a lot of, in the newspapers that the CEO fired Ms. Wendy McKinnick. You know, it was the board that had to take that decision that we need to investigate Wendy McKinnick, not the CEO, but through the CEO. The CEO was given permission to go through the processes of, I wanted to correct that it is the board that took that decision. It was a very, very difficult decision because this was a fellow board member, a very, very well-known fellow board member, but that is the case. Now, coming to the question, I think it was Mr. Mgoni, perhaps, that you want to know about the amnesty. No, let me start with Mr. Adams. Mr. Adams, we really agree and agree with you fully that you cannot encourage criminals to come back. Our system does differentiate between who has been a criminal for what reason, and then we park that aside. But there are honest people. There are people who, for various reasons, for whatever reasons, they couldn't come back. Their fitness certificates expired because this thing we've got to renew annually. Expired, and then for whatever reason they can't come back and renew their fitness certificate. That person never did anything wrong. It may be perhaps because of economic conditions, and other reasons. Those are the guys that were encouraged to come back because to transform this organization. And unfortunately, that touches on the black population. To encourage transformation, we need to do something in the form of amnesty to say that, my brother, please come back. There's still a room for you to come and re-register with us so that we continue doing business. So we really don't want to be in the business of encouraging criminality. We've got to wipe out of the criminals this industry. The question of, I think there was a question of barrier to transformation, you know, perhaps what are the contributing factors towards, you know, people not getting into this proper. You know, I'll be straight to the point here. You take a black person, because our target is not older people, it's young people, especially from university, from schools, you know, who want to, you know, get into the job market. You take a guy who's past matric, he's a black guy from the township, and then he's looking for a job, and he comes to this industry. I perhaps run an agency, I employ this industry. What happens? Number one, they don't know that our industry, some of them don't know that our industry is commission-based. There's no salary. You know, when we get to this industry, we have got to stay with, you know, for about 4 or 5 months without getting a salary. What happens when you throw a young guy from township and leave? And then that's the reason why, for the first time, we decided, you know, to have this committee working with other stakeholder services. Service sector does play a role in terms of training. But you can train a person up to a certain extent. But after that, there must be life after training. A person must go and work. Now, if this person cannot go work, then perhaps when he works, there's no basic salary, there's nothing. And then he will wait for a commission after a year or 6 months. What happens? The morale goes down and the person leaves. So these are issues that we're addressing. Like if I can give you an example, our chairman when I was presenting, he mentioned stakeholders like your public works. That's just an example. These are ideas that you are thinking. But we will come and report once we are at that stage. Just a simple idea. Going to public works. Public works, we have got a big property portfolio in your business. Why do they employ so much? These people have been trained by service. It has been AAB has helped them in terms of training these people. But why don't we create opportunities for these guys so that they get full-time employment? Not employment that is based on commission, like me running my own company. This guy will rely on selling a house and after. You know, those ideas that were. Also, the banks come on board because, you know, the banks have got interest, you know, in this industry. So these are issues, these are interventions that we are still brainstorming through this transformation committee, of course, working in hand with other stakeholders. And then, in terms of the number of claims, I think Mr. Ngunu asked that as to the percentage. It's difficult now to give you the poll figure, but I can assure you, my brother, that ever since we started, you know, from that board, the number of claims has reduced. When we came there, it was heap and heap of files, people claiming, but it's reduced because of work title. That's why claims committee is one committee that meets very, very regularly in EAP to address these issues. But if you want to put a poll figure to how much percentage, perhaps you can give that later, but we don't have a poll figure now. Thank you very much, sir.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just to support my fellow board members, what I just need to set out first is that I was appointed as a board member in March of last year, of which then the old board that I was appointed to came to an end around about August, September. And from September until around about now, Feb, when the new board was appointed, no activity took place. No real activity, except for claims committees still had to continue because those were urgent issues. So that is just the basis of getting clarity of where we are in terms of one of the issues Mr. Adams raised is that, you know, we sat with issues of IT and all of these for very long, but that's not true. We inherited these issues. These are legacy issues from the past, and we are currently obviously formulating policy now to deal with those issues. And one of it, for example, on the IT issue is addressing the service providers that have been appointed, looking at the PFMA, was it complied with, and in terms of corporate governance, that's the one issue. The other issue of Mr. Gumede there, in terms of lack of transformation, the barriers to entry, for me, it's very, very simple, and just to elaborate, yes, the commission is the primary example of why the candidates do not stay in the industry. Rawson might offer training, but that's the essential part of it. They offer the training. The candidate stays there for 6 months. They cannot. There's performance targets that has to be met. They do not meet those performance targets, and they actually have to leave due to being forcefully leaving and due to the circumstance of not earning any income for that matter. Then there's the issue of qualification. We are professionalizing the industry at this very moment in time. So the standards of entry is raised quite high into the NQF, NQF 5 level. So you need to have a fair amount of background, whether work experience and some form of knowledge to attain a qualification in this industry. And that, in essence, becomes a barrier to entry for many, especially the black candidates that we are trying to earmark to get into the industry. And coupled with that is obviously the cost of the FFC certificate, the cost of running a business to get off the ground. All of those entrepreneurial issues come into play when it comes to in terms of barriers to entry. So those are the key factors in terms of seeing the lack of transformation. But in talking about the transformation, we rightfully so, we acknowledge that we haven't dealt with transformation sufficiently because we had issues that we had to deal with in terms of the new board that has been appointed, and now we formulated a transformation committee to deal with those issues. And there is currently a paper on the table, a discussion paper, dealing with transformation. So like Mr. Chair said there, our chair, that we will produce some formulation and report regularly to the industry itself on our strategy going forward. I think the number of claims, I think I'll end off on that issue and maybe come back to some other issues later. The number of claims that I'm recently serving on the claims committee, we met yesterday. I can tell you we sat with 12 claims. And out of the 12 claims, we rejected three of those claims we rejected and postponed three and accepted the balance of it. So we're working vigorously on that, and again, I support the view that the direct result of the reduction in claims is because of the inspectorate function that has taken place. And secondly, we've identified poor business practices or questionable business practices and trends of certain agents, unregistered or registered, and we are putting measures in place to actually stop those trends. And hence for that is also the reason for a decline in the actual claims as we are speaking. So, and one of it is the name and shame policy that we are going to implement, where we will be publishing it on our website, on the agency magazine, and in one of the national newspapers. So that is one of the measures that we're putting in place. So that's the issue on claims. So the claims issues, we're dealing with misleading, misrepresentation, fraudulent activities in the industry, and those are we looking at in great detail, and we're putting barriers to stop that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. I would like to emphasize maybe the point of why we keep on hammering on the policy of compliance and inspections. We keep on hammering on it because we don't want a situation where a whistleblower reported the matter to the board and it only comes to the attention of the board after 5 months, 6 months. We ask ourselves why this matter is reported after such a long time. And maybe to alleviate the fears of the chairperson there when he was asking about how fair will those inspections be when they are in-house. I mean, if we're going to operate according to a policy, I don't think there will be, you should, the chairperson, have any fears. Even if a board member is owning an agency and everything is done according to the policy, no fears. Everything will run all right. Just to give an example, I think I'm sitting here on the second term as a board member. I was appointed in the first term in 2008, but late 2007, yeah. When our first meeting, we got a report from the CEO that 12 big agencies were investigated, blah, blah, and most of those companies, they were found to be not complying with certain compliance, but they were just given like notices or, you know, nothing serious was done to them. Why? We're asking ourselves. So that is why we're hammering on the policy issue to alleviate, you know, such problems that maybe you use your own discretion to say, this one is a small thing, I will just give a small amnesty like, and then this one is a big one. You know, you use your own discretion. So hence, we're hammering on the policy, and that will be in our website running, like the chairperson has said, in April. And the minimum qualification. In 2008, there was an act that by 2011 December, you should be having NQF 4 as an agent or NQF 5 as a principal agent by the end of December. That act came into place not to be a barrier to entry, but it came into place to professionalize the industry. You will imagine yourself, the entry to this industry was you write a simple 40-question multiple choice question, then you answer them, then you pass, then you're a principal. You must from that time, manage your task accounts, which is a big thing. Whether you had matric, standard 7, you will see a lot of people who enter, they've got hardly a matric. So we're saying to run your own agency, that was a low criteria for entering into this industry. And we're happy to have NQF4s and NQF5s introduced into this industry to professionalize it. You can imagine handling a transaction worth $1 million with your standard 7 and having passed your 40-question multiple choice. The other entry was, if you don't want to write that 40-question multiple choice question, you were supposed to register under a principal, and then after a year, you were granted the opportunity to become a principal. To me, that was very weak, and it had a lot of loopholes for one to be running, especially a trust account matters. So, and to this effect, why I'm saying it's not a barrier to entry, I mean, most of the black people has done the qualification. I think about 12,000 have done the qualification. They don't have a problem to go through that qualification. The problem, the big problem is once they finish the qualification, the real matter is they don't have finances to sustain themselves and start the business. That is what is the big problem in our industry. Thank you.
Honorable Yami Mhoni.
Thanks, Chair. Where I'm seated, I want to take it from what you said, Chair, earlier on. You know, we have seen a number of boards or parastatal where you have serious challenges. And as politicians, as member of parliament, if we are doing the oversight and only to find that for a number of years they are not getting clean audits. But where I'm seated now, Chairperson, as you have said it, you know, it's a very good thing that we have got a competent board. For almost six, if I don't mistake, consecutive years, you had a clean audit with your administration, of course, CEO included. And I'm asking myself now whether can we be assured that after whatever that is happening now, we're still going to have the very same competent, efficient board where you'll have a clean audit, because part of what was said by the president in his State of the Nation address early this year is that we are going to fight corruption. That is a priority. But once you read the statement from the department and the manner in which the board is handling the issue, you see that there's a problem somewhere. You know, Chairperson, you are assuring us it's purely a labor issue. And the department is saying, no, we want to investigate whether there was no abuse of power. And that is making me, where I'm seated, to have more questions than answers, to say, are we really going to have the very same efficiency after this court process, where we'll be assured that at the end of the financial year, despite the challenges of transformation, but to get a clean audit is not a child's play. I mean, we're talking from experience. We have people coming year in, year out, and they can't get it correct. And they will have the challenges that will be worse. I don't know, Chairperson, in your commending the board, the department is talking about the abuse of power as something that is still going to be investigated. And the chairperson has said, no, it's purely a labor matter. Well, it might not be now that we can get the details, but I'm a little bit worried and concerned that the thing that we said is going to be a priority, we're going to do oversight on government that would be fighting, and where there is efficiency, we might end up having problems, because it's clear that there's more to this thing than what is being presented to us. That is clear to me. I might be reading things wrong, but what I'm reading, you can't have two statements talking about one issue, but somewhere, somehow, you can see that the other one is coming with a middle ground and is not really giving a detailed information that can make one to speak with authority, with understanding of what is happening, because we are expected to be well informed so that we can be able to assist. And even in the end of the financial year, we still want to see the clean audit. You were able to turn, when we started, I remember very well, the deficit was more than, I think, 5 million, or it was 7 or whatever million. And now you have a profit of more than 20 million, of which is an indication that things were moving quite well. And all of a sudden, we have this problem. And you, when you are supposed to provide us with that information, maybe with the very same subsidy care rule, Chairperson, we might not get the detailed information. But there's more to this thing. And I'm hoping that one day we're still going to have something that will be efficient and that will make us to be proud and say, this is a board that, despite the challenges, we can ask others to come and learn a thing or two in terms of how to have it correct. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just study the questions that was not adequately responded to on the issue of consumer protection. I asked the question, how prevalent is unscrupulous behavior of the board or agencies prevalent in the low-income earners when they buy houses? Chairperson, I'm asking because in my constituency, there was one estate agent that sold three houses to, I mean, sold three people the same house and disappeared. And people want their money, they paid him their money, they went there. The office is no longer there. I just want to know how prevalent is this thing. Is it countrywide? Is it to certain places or what? And then my other follow-up question, Chairperson, is what you asked on the inspection. You said their capacity. Is there the capacity related to all those inspections, or are they going to outsource it? And last, Chairperson, reading between the lines on the dismissal of the CEO, if I'm correct, I read that perhaps was she trying to protect other estate agencies and then reporting late to the board of others that were being doing unsafe work or being unethical? Or was it really an ethical issue because the board says
she was dismissed of governance issues, did she act unethically or not?
Thanks. I want to assure the members and the board that we're definitely going to have a meeting in about 2 weeks' time. Maybe the matters of the court would have cleared. We've got to respect that sub judice rule. The matter might be finished in the courts today or whenever, but I want to believe in 2 weeks' time. So we do have a week that I think we've set aside, because the issue of transformation and the happenings are of public interest. So we are going to engage. So I want us to actually, at this level, leave those issues that are still within the courts and deal with this issue. But to say to the chairperson, in 2 weeks' time, we are going to have an interrogation from this committee when the courts are finished. Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say that the board has filed its papers, and as soon as we filed our papers in court, those papers became public, and the reason for the suspensions are contained in those papers, and people can easily access them on, for instance, on the internet. I think MoneyWeb would be one good source where we clearly elaborate on what happened, where it started, why there was a suspension, and why there was a firing. We are totally convinced that we acted properly within the law, but the court will decide later today what the status should be. And as we correctly pointed out earlier, we will fully abide by the decision of the court. We acted conviction informed by the principles that we believe in that I clearly explained before. So there's no agenda, it's just strictly a labor matter. But again, we accept that the DTI as a shareholder has a responsibility to investigate, to establish whether we acted within the law, whether there was abuse or not, and I think the Department of DTI is also acting within the law. So there is no contradiction here at all. There is no sending out of conflicting messages. All of us are simply acting within our mandate. So I'd encourage members to visit the MoneyWeb and access those documents. Are not only ours, but they also come from the other party. There was a question that you answered, but which we did not respond to. This is about what is our understanding of transformation. I'll be quite simple and straightforward. There is another process called the Property Charter that we're hosting at the EAB that we're also funding, that is looking at developing a property charter for the country. Our approach as the EAB is one, to increase the numbers of sustainable estate agencies in the country. Number two is to be able to identify business opportunities by working with other stakeholders, your parastatals, your public works program, so that these opportunities can be accessible by black or PDI estate agents. So in brief, that is what our understanding of the transformation of the industry should be. It's about increasing the numbers of sustainable black agencies, which also deal with big contracts. At the same time, we need to be able to identify contracts and ensure that those contracts are accessible at all times by PDI estate agencies. And I think that will be the focus of this organization, to make sure that estate agencies are able to access those opportunities. I can also state this without any fear, that the fight against corruption will never be compromised, and that clean audits has been a culture of this organization. It's not about an individual, but it's about an institution. People come and go, but an institution remains, its culture remains, and I can assure this assembly that clean audits will continue, but at the same time, performance by the EAB will be improved. It will not remain at the same level at all times, but it will keep on improving and responding to the new challenges of the time. With regard to the issue of inspections, whether we have the capacity, we have outsourced inspections to four major companies, and I can assure you that we are not happy with the returns that we're getting. And we feel that if we have this capacity in-house, this inspection in-house, done in-house and monitored on a regular basis with proper plans, with proper targets, I'm definitely sure that we will be able to ensure that this service is carried out effectively and that the business is cleaned properly so that we have an industry that all of us can be proud of. I think my colleague wanted to say something.
Thank you, sir. Honorable Mngoni, just to answer a question, I think that is a very, very interesting question. I just want to assure you that, you know, this thing is prevalent everywhere in the country, not in Free State only. These are the things that we are dealing with on a daily basis. You know, the example I'm giving, you know, the other example is where some, you know, these agents that are not registered, you know, I call them crooks because they're crooks. They sell, they can sell even a land that doesn't exist to people. Just to, you know, to get money. Now, this example is only that, you know, when perhaps you read in the newspaper, it's like we're dealing with big companies only. They are small companies, small people that we punish almost every day. We get them almost every day. And then if you could, very welcome if you can give us a name of who are doing that. Yeah, we don't have to, perhaps can talk about that. There's this in this area. We deal with those people. So there's a list that we're dealing with. These things that we're dealing with them every day, small and big companies doing that. Thank you very much, sir.
Acting TG, your parting shot.
Departing, thank you, Mr. T. Just two points, and I think that I think we take seriously the concerns and the issues raised by the honourable members. Let me firstly say I agree with the chair. There's no conflict between or contradiction or differences. It's really different responsibilities. In this matter, we have the shareholder, which is the DTI. We have the board, which is appointed by the DTI, and then we have an employee, which is the CEO. Now we all have different functions, as I've indicated. The board must see to the good governance, proper administration of the act, and they must appoint the CEO, they must appoint staff, and so on. They must monitor the performance of staff. That is the responsibility of the board. Our responsibility as the shareholder is to see that the board we appoint also conducts its work properly. And that is what we are looking at. So when I use the word abuse of power, I'm just not using it in the sense that we think the board is abusing its power. No, there has been an accusation made in the public and also by the CEO. And as you know, if I can just explain, this board is not like other boards, which is completely independent from the industry they regulate. Normally, we never let the players be referees as a general rule. But as I said, in terms of this outdated act, the act defines who do you appoint to this board. The minister can't just decide. They say so many people of the industry must be on this board. So we are forced to take on people. And it is true that in the past this board has been dominated by established white businesses. And that's why there was no transformation in this industry. So we are also therefore careful that, and you know, Wendy Mechanic, who was now found guilty of fraud, was a board member and a very established and active board member for many years. So that is why we can understand when the public says the CEO is fired because of this board, because the industry sits on that board and they're supposed to regulate themselves and they might be acting, they might be using their board position to act. So you see, the concern is legitimate. It's a proper concern, and that's why it came up. So therefore, we must reassure the public, we must, as government, we are accountable to say that there was nothing wrong happening in this matter. So I think that is what all we are looking at. We are not trying to judge the board. We are not thinking they abuse power or something. We must be satisfied that they followed due process, that they acted within their powers, that they were concerned about the operations and the smooth operations of the body. So that's really all, and I hope that clarifies this matter about what we are in investigating, because we're not going to be able to run an effective government if the minister must get involved in each and every labor dispute. That must be left to the board to do, and that is why we're trying to insist on this neutrality.
Now, thanks very much. You know, this year is the year of job creation, and the board is not exempt. It was stated clearly that all government departments and their agencies would need to come up. That is why when next time we meet, we'd want those numbers. The board is targeting to create so many jobs next time we meet, and that is in the near future. You know, at one stage, I think in 2002, in one sector, in the hospitality sector, there was a problem that government and government entities were using establishments and hotels that were not graded. And there was a cabinet memo going to departments that no department, no agency should use a hotel or a B&B that is not registered, that is not graded. I think we'll have to use the same approach here. Why should government use estate agents that are not transformed, that do not comply to empowerment? I think we need to go and get some lessons on that and put that as a regulation, because if government utilizes estate agencies that are not transformed, they're actually perpetuating this untransformation. For lack of a better word. So we might even propose as a committee, parliament, that you must have that thing. No transformation in the agency, no BE, no government job as a form of moving forward. But thanks very much to the members, and especially to the board, the department. We gave you a short notice. Thanks for making all the time. This matter is now of public interest. We'll also act, as I say, I promise you, in 2 weeks' time we're going to meet and actually deal with this issue. I wish we would have had some time, we'll arrange some time to talk about this thing as a committee and the board, even on any strategic meeting of what we feel, what should be done on this issue. To the honourable members, thanks very much for standing in and for the questions that you asked. I know you still have some more questions. You can engage with the acting DG outside and the chairperson of the board outside this meeting. To everybody, the media, and everybody out there, thanks very much. The meeting stays adjourned.